Welcome to Investor Resources with your hosts, Don Creech and Perry Sykes, who both realize that the market doesn't know what keeps you up at night. It doesn't know when you want to retire, and it doesn't know how old you are. The simple truth is, the market doesn't care. But if you care, then you've tuned in at the perfect time. You're listening to Investor Resources, bringing clarity to the confusing world of finance. Here are your hosts of Investor Resources, Don Creech and Perry Sykes.
Well, good afternoon. This is Don Creech.
And this is Perry Sykes. Welcome to the show, everyone.
So this is our last show at 3 o'clock.
Kinda, yeah.
Yeah. So next Saturday, we are going to be on at 11 a.m. So if you come looking for us at 3 o'clock, you're going to say, what happened? Those guys go away? And, well, we didn't go entirely away. We just simply relocated on the station's calendar to a morning time slot. And we'll look forward to seeing you there and look forward to getting our Saturday afternoons back.
There you go. Works out great.
Yeah. Couple of different things there on the schedule. We'll remind you again. But also next Saturday, we have our monthly stock market update webinar. And if you have not registered, do so now at irradio.com. That's irradio.com. And as we say every month, we don't know what's in it yet because we haven't put it together. We don't do that until Thursday and Friday and sometimes as late as Saturday morning.
Depending on what's happening out there, we want to get the good stuff in there. That's right.
So you want to be current with it because it's not just a standard pablum pitch that you should be doing business with us. We want you to understand what's going on in the market. And if you don't understand that, you're not going to understand the pablum pitch that your financial advisor is probably giving you to just sit still, sit on your hands, close your eyes, go do something, but don't bother me. And because eventually this will be okay. Well, you know, eventually may not be your time frame for when you're going to need the money. And so maybe some adjustments in your portfolio might be prudent, but they don't fit inside a best practice standard diversification buy and hold portfolio. When you have a stock market that until this week, and this week finally broke the pattern, we've had seven consecutive weeks of decline in the market. And this week we finally got an up week. If it had not finished up and had continued to collapse, this would be a one in 100 year event. But the pattern broke. We got at least what looks like a bear market rally, and it's quite a rally.
It's pretty broad. We'll take it. Exactly.
And it was, it's significant enough that when we take a look at six major indicators that we consider important for market health, what's the rate of change that's going on with the S&P, and how does that compare to high-yield bonds, which are a risk asset? Whether investors are putting money in or taking it out, how does this compare to bonds and the spread between short and long? What kind of volume, and whether or not the number of stocks that are advancing is more numerous than the ones that are falling. So when we look at those six macro factors, Thursday, four of them turned bullish, and Friday, our accounts went back in the market. Now, is this a permanent position? Does this mean the bad news is over? No. Bear markets typically last longer, and there are certainly unresolved issues in the economy.
All the same issues, in fact. All the same issues that made those 7 weeks so bad are still there. But the response from the buyers in the market has been so broad and so big that it was like I said, Don, time to move back in on Friday. And now we just watch. We watch and see how long does that last. We don't think this is going to be the turnaround that says that's it, the bear market's over. It's probably going to head lower at some point. But we just don't know that. We also know that this – This little bump has been large enough and broad enough that it can't be ignored. So we're back in for now.
So we have no idea how long this is going to last. And if you've listened to us any length of time, you know, we don't forecast the market
ever.
If we want to take a look at bear markets, there's a lot of bad news to look at. You start drawing correlations between this first 4.5, 5 months of the year. We have another couple, one more trading day to finish 5 months. You look at this 5 months of the year, start comparing it to down markets in prior years. I mean, it's not pretty by any means. And if you're going to make that correlation, you're going to have to assume that this is going to take longer to unwind the bad news and find enough good news to reverse this and get us into what would be reclassified as a bull market instead of a bearish in the making anyway.
Right.
So we got a bounce. That's good news. We've had some bounces before. They did not last earlier in the year, and this one may not either. But for the time being, we're going to take what we can get. For those of you who just kind of sit still and hang on, your month-end report at this point is going to look like, well, it's not so bad anymore, but it's still not going to have a lot of revival because your safety valve bonds and the Barclays Broad Bond Index, which is in an exchange-traded fund, and the ticker is AGG. As of Friday, your safety valve, your buffer of volatility is negative 9.04. And if you have treasuries in there, like 20-year treasuries, the TLT, well, it really improved a lot because it finished with this recent rally. It rallied pretty well this week. And so it's only down your bonds now, your bonds, your safety valve. It's only down 14% year to date. That's the safe money in your portfolio.
That's very different. That's very different from the past. That's the reason bonds end up in portfolios to be the safety valve. But we're not in the same environment anymore. So they don't operate the same anymore. But your pie chart portfolio doesn't adjust for that. It just keeps looking at, you know, the last 50 years and plugs in that average number. And they expect those bonds to be making 4 or 5% a year. And it's not even close. So and they're not going to change. It's just going to stay in your portfolio. And, you know, their attitude is, well, in another decade or two, you'll never even know this happened. In the meantime, there's being a giant hole blown in your portfolio, and you don't have to take that. You don't have to let it happen to you.
So just a reminder, this is our last 3 o'clock broadcast. Next Saturday, we're going to be on at 11, and that will be just shortly after we wrap up the monthly webinar on Stock Market Update. If you haven't registered for that, there's still time to do so at irradio.com. irradio.com. Lower left-hand corner of the website says webinar, a couple of clicks, your email and your name, and you're going to get a link to register or to join us. And if you can't join us live, then we'll send you a replay link. There's plenty of time to ask questions. And you can also send us questions in advance for us to build into the webinar. Be sure we get your material covered. And if you send them to us in advance, we can probably do some extra prep work with charts to help explain what we see with regard to the question you ask. And if you're going to email us, it's help@irradio.com. help@irradio.com. Anyway, I'm looking at the S&P chart, and this last week is really interesting because it's such a shift. But while it moved up a couple of technical steps, it is still below the major downtrend lines. And we have to say this is a bounce.
Correct.
We can't say that. We have removed ourselves from the trading range.
It's all we didn't get an all clear signal and say, hey, everybody jump back in. It's fine now. Let's all head for the deep end of the pool. The S&P 500 is still, you know, well below the 200-day average. And there's an old saying that says nothing good ever happens below the 200-day average. So this is a dangerous place for the market, but this is a really broad-based bounce. And so it's one that we're going to follow in. We're going to follow the money. We're going to, you know, stay with it as long as we can. It's one that you have to watch, though, on a daily basis, because it could turn on a dime the same way it did last week when it turned up.
So part of the question that we face is, what is the Fed going to do?
Yeah, that's a good question.
In the past, when we had both COVID and we had the correction that was going on in the fourth quarter of 18, the Fed was trying to normalize. They were raising interest rates. They were trying to get rid of some of their bonds. And the market was down just, well, let's call it 20%. It was within a fraction of minus 20%. That on New Year's Eve, December 24th.
Right.
And the Fed panicked. And they said, we can't have that. We don't, you know, we're going to get blamed for this. This isn't good. So the Fed stepped in and started buying bonds and putting more money back into the market. And now they've said, we aren't going to do that this time. Well, we don't know if they are or not. And I don't think they know either, actually.
Those same two words that you said before, Don, the Fed panic, those are two very, very terrible words to go side by side. And we don't know that that's the same thing could happen again just as fast.
So as I mentioned a moment ago, if you compare what's happened the first 5 months of this year with other bear markets, there's more downside to go here, statistically speaking.
Yeah.
The real issue is whether or not the Fed will step into the market if it continues to drop. How frightened will they be that this is going to turn into a deep recession, out of which they really have very little control, because they haven't started to reduce their $9 trillion bond portfolio to any extent.
Right. I mean, they said they're gonna, but they haven't started yet. So
yeah, nobody knows who's gonna buy all those bonds.
Yeah.
I mean, Japan, the ECB, European Central Bank, China. Oh yeah, China's really interested in helping us solve that problem. In the past, China, Japan, ECB, they've been big buyers of the bonds. They're not as interested anymore because they have their own problems. They're trying to get rid of their bond portfolios, not buy more. So will the retail investor step up and buy that much? If they do, then prices are probably going to have to fall in order for that to be attractive on a price standpoint. And if prices are falling, then interest rates are rising. And you get the high enough interest rates and people start saying, well, I haven't
maybe
seen
now.
That in a long time.
Maybe now.
Yeah.
Maybe it's time. But that's the spot we're in. And it's not an easy place to be. And it's going to take some time for it to work out, like you said, Don. That's why we say we're not done with this bear market yet. There are some longer term negative trends that are going to have to be worked through. And it hasn't happened yet. One thing that is happening, though, is we're right up against our first break here. Going to have to get out of here shortly. I'd like to remind everyone that next Saturday we are having our monthly market update. That's on Saturday, June 4th, 9 o'clock in the morning. And to register for that, just go to iriradio.com. That's iriradio.com. Head to the webinar page, and there's a registration link. Just give that a click, and you will get an email back. And next Saturday morning, just give that a click at 9 a.m., and you will be live online with us. You'll be able to see what we're looking at, see our charts, and get a little take on what's going on with the market out there, what we're doing with portfolios, and there's always plenty of time to get your questions answered. So again, head to iriradio.com and register for next week's webinar. Also, we'll be that's at 9 a.m. At 11 a.m., that'll be our first 11 o'clock show next Saturday also. So don't forget that that's the first day of our time change. If you want to talk to us this afternoon, give us a call, 800-465-8770. That's 800-465-8770. 8770. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
I beg your pardon. I never promised you a rose garden along with the sunshine. There's gotta be
a little rain sometime. So, never having promised you a rose garden, that's actually one of the things that we tell prospective clients. If you've listened to us, it's easy to assume that we know what we're doing and we know where the bottoms are and we know where the tops are, and we're going to get out at the top and get into the bottom. We don't know that. Nobody knows that until after the top and the bottom have occurred.
Absolutely. We're pretty careful to make sure we tell people we're never going to get out at the bottom. We're going to get out after that. We have to see that bottom.
You mean
out.
Get back in at the bottom?
Correct. We're never going to get out at the top. Yes.
There we go.
Same way, top or the bottom, it doesn't matter. We're going to miss it because, like you said, Don, no one knows where that is until you're looking back at it. And we never make that prediction. We wait for those trends to form, and we follow the money out of the market, and we follow the money back into the market. That's just what we did last week.
So it's process. It's not forecasting. It's process. And I'm looking at the S&P 500 chart on one of my monitors, and there's different ways that people define bear markets. So last week we ended up, by definition, intraday, the market crashed, the S&P crashed through 20% negative for the year.
Correct.
Now the NASDAQ's been there for a long time so far this year. I mean, it's really disastrous over there on the tech side. But the S&P had been kind of working its way down slowly, saying, I don't want to go there. But it finally did. And sellers finally took it through the 20% mark, and by the dippers jumped in, and the hedge funds and high-frequency traders, the proprietary trading desk, they said, oh, we got guys in here. We can push around a little bit. And so we came up off of that. But that 20% isn't a magic number. There's no statistical reason that 20% is a bear market and 19.95 is not.
It's fine. Yeah, it's just commonly accepted that 20%, that's what we're going to call a bear market. But like you said, Don, that's completely random. And that doesn't mean the market's okay above 20% down, but it's really bad below 20% down. That's just not the case. The S&P 500 is not in great shape, but it has shown some short-term recovery here.
So one of the other definitions is that if the S&P is below its 200-day moving average, that's bear market territory. And we are still there. In fact, we're still below the 50-day moving average. Just to get back to the 200, we need more than a 7% rally. Maybe we'll get it, and maybe we won't. And maybe it'll hit the 50-day and say, yeah, there's not enough promise to go any higher.
Yep.
And then it starts to fall apart again, in which case it's unlikely that we will continue to hold the things that we have in our current portfolios today. So the bear market is it's kind of like an emotional state of mind. We are range bound in a whole set of bad news data feeds. Inflation's not good. Wages rising and not being able to hike prices to offset higher wages is not good. Diesel fuel is an input for virtually everything you buy.
Everything.
Whether it's food, clothes, toys, technology, in order to get it to you, it required diesel fuel. And on the East Coast, they're running out. And that's likely to spread. But if you have a higher cost of diesel fuel, the truckers charge more money. And they pass that on to the distributor, the restaurant.
I mean, even everybody, prices go up. Yep.
Yeah, even if the cost of wheat flour wasn't going up, the cost of diesel to get the flour to the bakery or the pizza shop is going up. And so they're paying more for what they can get. The inflation problem remains a serious impediment for any rally to sustain itself. I'm skipping ahead because it's right on topic here, but it's not in this part of my outline, is that the last time you filled up the gas tank, you're probably standing there scratching your head and saying, I haven't seen this since 2008. Under Obama. Well, Obama's back, basically. And right now the forecast is that we are very likely looking at $10 a gallon in gasoline.
Think about that for a second. That's gonna be a bit of a shock. If you're old enough to have been through the oil embargo back in the 70s, we saw nothing close to that. A lot of that's got to do with inflation, of course, but we've never seen pump prices that high before.
So if you own a car that uses gasoline, and that's most of us and most of our cars, you may be thinking you need a part-time job, or if you're retired, go back to work just in order to
gasoline job. Yeah, just afford the gasoline to get to your real job. Yeah, that's coming.
So it's basic math. There is no profiteering going on at the local gas station.
Correct.
I mean, their margin is typically 2-3%. If you want to talk about profiteering, talk about state and local governments. Most of the cost of gasoline is not the local retailer that you're doing, but it's the state and federal governments taxing it, because it's hidden, and you don't have to fill out your IRS form and report how much gasoline you use so they can tax you on it. They just take it in the gallon at a time. But when it comes down to the basic math, every barrel of oil is 42 gallons of crude. And it's been around 110, it's been as high as 115. And short-term forecasts are 125 to 150. I read one yesterday forecasting 200 by sometime next year.
That would not be good. Yeah, that would not be good.
That's pretty optimistic.
Yeah.
So the cost of just the oil right now is about $2 in a gallon of gasoline is about $2.60. So, and now you add the governor's taxes on top of it, and you have to have some distribution costs to get it to you. I mean, you start looking at $10. I mean, it's not that far away, and it won't be that pleasant. And there's nothing the Fed can do about it.
That's a key. The Fed does not control that, and the only power the Fed has is to try to slow down the economy at large, altogether. And when gas prices increase significantly, then drivers tend to drive much less. It's happened. We've seen that happen before. When the price spikes, drivers back off, and that brings some relief to the supply, but not generally to the price.
Well, and it doesn't help the economy. People decide we're not going out anymore.
That's the problem. They're not out moving around anymore. They were out because they were out buying stuff. And if they stay at home, of course, people aren't.
Well, plus then they're not spending money at a local restaurant because the gas tank has consumed a good portion of their budget.
Yep.
Assuming they're still commuting to work. I mean, taking kids back and forth to school. Pretty soon the school districts are going to be asking for more money because they pay for diesel to run those buses to get your kids back and forth. This doesn't have an easy, actually it does have an easy solution, and that would be for the administration to allow refineries to ramp up and for drillers to drill and to finish the pipeline to make delivery easier and less expensive
More
and
efficient.
Safer.
Yep.
Yeah. So somehow this is really screwy, because the United States has spent the most money developing how to drill for oil and gas and deliver it and coal with the least economic climate impact. We have the cleanest oil. We have the cleanest coal in the world. But the administration wants to go to Venezuela. They're kind of withdrawing from Russia. They're going to the Mideast, any place else they can, where the oil is much dirtier and the processes for extraction are much more damaging to the climate issue, which they tout. I mean, so what difference does it make if we drill oil here or we drill it in Venezuela? We still are after the oil.
Same planet. Yeah, it's all happening here. Yeah.
Same planet. It's just that our stuff is cleaner, but they don't want to drill it here for...
Doesn't make a lot of good sense. And economically, it's a disaster. So we'll see how long it lasts.
Well, and we should take a break. I just ran out of my current page.
Okay, well, that's fine. We're right at the bottom of the hour. I'd like to remind everyone that we do have a weekly email newsletter, our week in review. If you'd like to start receiving that, send us an email. Send that to help@iriradio.com. That's help@iriradio.com. Just put week in review in the subject line, and we need your first and last name in the body of the email, and you will begin receiving that on Monday. It goes out most Mondays, and it's a pretty good look at the financial news of the previous week. Let you know what we think about things, and more importantly, let you know what you probably don't have to worry about too much. So it gives you a little clarity, gives you a little opinion on what's going on out there. Again, send that email to help@iriradio.com. You are listening to Investor Resources here on AM 770 KTTH. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
The Lone Ranger.
Well, we need the Lone Ranger to come in and rescue the Fed, basically.
Why not? Yeah, why not?
I mean, this is one of the worst years ever in the stock market. We came in on the first day of the year, January 3rd was the first trading day of the year, and the market closed at an all-time high of just under 4,800. It was up about 2/3% that day, and it turned out to be a rare day of finishing in the black.
That's not good.
Until this week.
Right.
It's been really hard to deal with this. And it's been a year of whipsaw. I mean, we've been in a, it looks like it recovers and then it unwinds. It recovers and then it unwinds. It recovers and it unwinds. So that's referred to as whipsaw. Up one day, down the next. It's big days up sometimes. And then it reverses almost all of it, sometimes all of it, the following day. And so the buy the dippers have really had a difficult time this year. And what appears to be in transition is a market that is no longer buy on the dip, but sell on the rally. Mm-hmm. And so with the broad move to positive indicators this week, we think this rally has some legs on it, so that's why we're in. But whether or not this is the bottom is behind us is yet to be determined.
And that's the important thing to watch. We make no bones about it. We have no indication that the secular bear market's over, the long-term bear market. There's nothing that says that. And the fact that this year has been so bad, you know, I read last week it was last Wednesday. If that would have been the year, the entire year, it'd be the fourth worst year in the history of the stock market. It's been horrible. And so it's not that it was kind of bad. It's been just devastatingly bad. And that doesn't turn on a dime usually. So we're back in the market, but we're watching it every day because it could just as quickly turn around. It's a dangerous market, and it's been tough to navigate all year. Even on the way down, it was hard. This has just been a crazy market.
So we go back to the 2000 tech bubble winding down, and it took a year to do that. It peaked in March of 2000, and then it went sideways for another year. And we had small dips and small rallies. It was clearly a trading range. It just got boring. It was frustrating, but not enough bad news for people to think that every .com that had been started wasn't going to survive. I mean, that didn't cross our minds until 2001.
Right.
And two, when all of a sudden all sorts of companies started to go belly up.
Everybody got a real feeling for the scope of what was going on. It's like, oh, this is not just a few of the high flyers that is really getting hit here. It is really broad. It's everybody. And then you understand, wow, this is a huge drawdown, and there's really no place to hide in large cap tech anymore.
So that changed the market, and the Fed panicked there. Well, the Fed was late, but they did decide that they needed to do something. So they started lowering interest rates, and they started putting money in the system. We got the real estate bubble, and then that collapsed. And the Fed said, well, we can't have that. So they started putting more money back in the market, and we've had our current bubble. And that's kind of where we are. The Fed has finally said, we can't keep doing this. We have to let some of the air out of the bubble.
Right.
And we just don't know how committed they actually are. If they are committed to this, then there's a lot more bad news to unwind in the year ahead.
And the primary driver may be inflation. It's just their feet are being held to the fire at the Fed, because the inflation number is, even if they can slow the progress, it's still heading north, and they need to get that under control before it runs amok, and they're really in trouble. So they really are going to be forced, I believe, to stay on their course even longer than they would like to, and longer than they have previously, because inflation is going to force that.
Well, their easy out is they'll just adjust the way they calculate inflation.
That's happened before, too, sure.
Regularly. One of the things that's going to keep driving inflation, even though the most recent inflation number was slightly lower than the prior, inflation is going to be persistent, because a third of the inflation calculation is housing prices. And they enter that data into the CPI on a 5-quarter lag. So far, the high prices of houses has only hit for 1 quarter. So the high prices that we saw all last year, every quarter, prices are higher, they're higher, they're higher. We kept seeing them go up. We've got 4 more quarters of that data coming into the CPI calculation. The Fed cannot undo that.
Correct.
Now, what is happening is that as interest rates have risen, and I think mortgage rates, 30-year mortgage rate finished about 5.15 at the end of the week, that's disqualifying buyers. People can't afford the higher payment, so they come out of the market, they become renters, or they stay as renters. And then with higher prices, the down payment is bigger. That takes people out of the market. Now, there's a couple of factors, and it's already showing up on the East Coast, and that is time on the market is getting longer, and people who are trying to sell their house are starting to accept lower prices than their asking price. So both of those will eventually ease some of the inflationary news, but it's a year away before that shows up.
Because the higher inflation numbers, the higher price increase numbers, those are already baked in. They are all going to enter into that inflation calculation. And it's, so like you said, Don, it's going to take a year before those start to lessen. So that's what we're looking at.
Then if you look at what's happening with small business employs 70% of the population. I mean, it's not big business, and it's not government. It's small business, entrepreneurs. They generally don't have really deep pockets to handle these price increases. And we haven't yet seen more businesses start to fail after restarting after COVID. That's a probability that we're going to be watching as we get further into this year, assuming these inflationary pressures stay with us. And inflationary pressures are hurting corporate earnings. Corporate officers are becoming more cautious about their forecasts for revenue and profit. And lower revenue, lower profits lead to lower stock prices.
And that's a given. Yeah, that's going to happen. So the more that spreads through the corporate returns, the more that's going to enter the market, because that's, of course, that means your company's less worth money. It's worth less money. Excuse me. It's going to be, the cash flows are going down. The amount of revenue you're generating is going down, and it's costing you more and more money internally to generate that level of revenue. So it's more expensive to be in business for a lower return. That makes your company worth less.
So the question with regard to your portfolio is, what's your process for dealing with that, assuming that that's a scenario that continues to unwind, that more and more CEOs and CFOs say, yeah, the picture for this next year doesn't look too pretty. And investors are going to say, really? well, I want some of my money back, and they start selling the stock. And so your portfolio continues to gradually erode and then rally, and then it erodes some more. The next low is lower than the last low. And that is a range-bound bear market. And if you're in a standard modern portfolio theory structure where you've got broad diversification across asset classes and your safety valve is bonds and you're basically a buy and hold, and maybe once a quarter you look at it and your advisor or your website process says, well, we'll sell the winners. Yeah, well, we're going to sell what's best and buy what's weakest, because that puts us back in balance, and eventually we think that's going to work. However, it's that
eventually word that's so dangerous. You really have no idea how long that'll take, and that's why it's so dangerous. Eventually it probably will, but that may be 10 years, 15 years from now. Who knows? 20 years from now. You never know how long that's going to take. That's the bad part of the process.
For young investors, they say, well, yeah, what are you talking about, years? I mean, my bear market in 2020 only lasted a couple of months.
Correct.
In fact, it wasn't even that. It was only 6 weeks. What are you talking about, years? Well, the 2007 to 9 great financial collapse, that one was about 5.5, I believe, maybe 6. But the tech bubble, that took 14 years to get back to break even if you were a buy and hold investor. So there are extended periods of time where markets correct. And most people have no plan for dealing with that, because we've been told, it's a sales talk, that the markets always go up. So just close your eyes and forget about it. You know, go on with the rest of your life, but forget about your finances.
Ignore that. And Don, what you just said is so important. It took 13 years to break even. Just to get back to where you were, that means you lost 13 years of the opportunity for growth. That's a long time to say, well, I'm not going to grow this at all for the next 13 years. If you ask somebody, would it be okay if your portfolio was just flat for over a decade? The answer, of course, would be no. I didn't sign up for that. But that's built into the process of that pie chart. That's what you're signing up for, although they'll never really tell you that in those words.
Well, the financial plan doesn't show that either.
Correct.
I mean, that's an interesting question that should always be asked in a financial plan. Let's look at this growth rate that, you know, my account's growing year after year after year. Where are the bear markets in here?
Mm-hmm.
Software doesn't do that.
It's
advisors,
not there. Yeah.
Yeah. one of our clients uses a national firm to do the financial plan work. And I challenged them on that. I mean, I was involved in the discussions with the planners about their assumptions. And basically, they assume that your net worth will grow on a consistent average annual return every year.
Correct.
And I said, but what happens when it doesn't? Like you did for 20 years from the 90s to 2008, from 80s, 90s to 2000. And then you're 15, 16 years going nowhere. Where's that show up in this number? Well, it doesn't. You want us to lower the number? You know, that's basically what you have to do, is you're assuming generally that your financial plan's built on an average rate of return of maybe 8 or 9%, when reality might be 3 or 4 when you have an extended bear market. And what's the plan to manage that? There isn't one.
There's not one. And that's the problem. There's no plan to manage it. And even if you lower that number, even if you look at, well, let's take the interest rate down, then that number becomes what's called a linear projection. It's just the same year after year after year. That's not reality. The world of investing doesn't work that way. The world of financial planning doesn't work that way. And your financial planner shouldn't be telling you that that's the way we're going to use this to analyze your future. To us, that renders all those projections useless. It's like these don't matter. Because you can put in any number you want. You can make it really great. You can make it where it doesn't look like you're going to meet your goals or not. But it's all just a guess. It's all just an estimate that you can put in any number you want in that equation. And that's why it's dangerous. You have to assume it's going to change. Like we always say, the only thing we know about the market is it's going to change. And you have to be willing to adapt to that, or you're going to be a loser long term. You just have to be willing to change. And that's just not part of the process with the pie chart. And that's a significant issue in our opinion. We are up against our last break of the afternoon here. If you'd like to get signed up for our next market update, that's coming up next Saturday, June 4th, 9 o'clock in the morning. You can sign up for that at IRIRadio.com. That is IRIRadio.com. It's a quick registration process. Just quick get to the webinar page and give the registration link a click. It just takes a second to sign up. If you'd like to talk to us here this afternoon, we have plenty of time to get your question on the board. That number is 800-465-8770. It's 800-465-8770. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Take it higher. Take it higher. That's what we want the market to do. We want it to take it higher. That's what people have been betting on all year, and they have been disappointed. Mm. You want to know what affects the market most? Everything.
that's about right.
just think about the things that investors have to worry about, and Mr. Market is trying to sort out, what do we do now? So stocks are in a bear market. Certainly tech is, and you can argue, when we just explained why the S&P basically is in a bear market. Bonds are negative. I mean, they just aren't making any money. They're not doing what they're supposed to do. Inflation's a 40-year high. Interest rates are rising. Many well-known big-name stocks are crashing. The Fed's raising interest rates. The war in Ukraine. China has a zero COVID policy, locking people in their condos and telling them they can't go get groceries or see a doctor. They have the ports locked down. Consumer confidence is crashing. And by the way, some people think we're headed into a recession.
That's quite a list. that makes me want to go back to bed. Hey.
So Charlie Ellis once said that, quote, forecasting the future of any variable is difficult. Forecasting the interacting futures of changing variables is more difficult. And estimating how other expert investors will interpret such complex changes is extraordinarily difficult. In other words, markets are hard.
It is so hard. And that's one of the reasons we're not in the prediction business. It's like there are so many variables and there are so many reactions that could be different to all those same variables. There's just no future in trying to make that prediction. So we stay away. But there's no shortage of people who are willing to tell you what's about to come up and tell you what's just preceded the market up to this point and what you should do now. And bottom line is they don't have a clue because no one does.
Nobody knows. But that's a good reason for you to join us next Saturday morning at 9 o'clock on our monthly stock market update webinar. If you have not registered, there's still time to do that. Go to our website, IRIRadio.com. That's IRIRadio.com. Lower left-hand corner of the website says webinar. And a couple of clicks, your email and your name, and you'll get a link to join us. If you cannot join us live, you'll get a replay link, and you'll be able to watch it on your own time. Find out what's going on and what are the things that you can be clear about in the market. And right now, it's not a lot, but we'll have something that will have hopefully be more certain than it was when we wrapped up this week.
Right.
Because things will be different next week. And we need to know what that is so that we do our best to evaluate the ongoing risk of being in the market. And we want you to know as much as possible even if you're running your own account or you have a financial advisor who is telling you to just sit still and hang on, you're going to have the ability to ask better questions about why. Why that? Why now?
Why now? It's that, that's such an important question. I just read a little story about Albert Einstein when he was a professor at Harvard. He gave his senior physics students all an exam, and his teaching assistant said, "Didn't you just give this same exam to these same students last year?" And he said, "Well, yeah, I did." And the assistant asked him, "Well, how can you do that? They've already seen the exam." And he said, "Yeah, but all of the answers have changed." So that's what's going on. We look at the same stuff a lot of times in the market every single month, but the answers change. So you have to reevaluate everything constantly to try to stay ahead of what's going on out there.
Well, I had not heard that before, Perry. That's really interesting. We can give the same test because the answers are different this time
what
around.
What you answered last time is not going to work. And that's the problem with that pie chart. That's the problem with modern portfolio theory. The answer is always the same. And that's never the case. The market is absolutely changing all the time. And the answers to what you should be doing now change constantly. And you have to be ready to make those changes or the market's just going to roll over you. Because as we say in the open, the market doesn't care what you think about it. It's going to do what it's going to do. And that's why you have to be able to adapt.
So it's not always good or bad that matters during times of stress, but it's degree. It's better or worse.
Oh, yeah.
And when researchers have studied the stock market going back to 52 and found that they could explain three factors driving the market 85% of the time. One's the productivity of the economy, which only matters over very long periods. So if you are a 10 to 20 to 30 year investor and you don't watch your account, then productivity of the economy is an important input. How much of the rewards of the economy end up going to households through income, dividends, or earnings? That's important. And that's particularly important now since income is being overly consumed by rising prices.
Correct. Yep.
That weren't planned at the start of the year. And then it's risk aversion, which is how humans react unfavorably to uncertainty.
And we do. We do that all the time. Risk aversion is such a strong drive. We don't want to do those things that look dangerous, and that includes in investing markets. And it doesn't even have to look dangerous, like they said. It just needs to be uncertain, and that's when people begin to back off from their investing stance.
So it's no surprise that emotions drive stuff. You have to remind yourself that things in the stock market can always be crazier than they are now.
Right.
And I've had people lately over the last several months ask me how am I personally handling all this volatility?
Sure.
And I said, in days gone by, when I was doing what the industry standard is and hiring Wall Street professional money managers to run our client accounts, I had a really hard time emotionally because I didn't have any real data. I had to call somebody and say, explain to me what you're doing.
What's
in the portfolio.
Here? Right.
See, my clients want to know, and I need the answer. What do I tell them? Well, today we don't do that anymore because we're looking at the data. We're building the portfolio. We have our rules. We're following the rules. So there are a few days where I say when I go to bed, Lord, please make the market go up tomorrow.
Right. Don't we all? Right.
But emotionally, because we aren't trying to guess the future, we're dealing with what is reality right now. And when reality changes, John Maynard Keynes says, when the facts change, I change my mind. What do you do?
And that is so important. Our process does not mean we're not wrong. We are. Anybody who invests is wrong. It means we won't stay wrong. And that's the big difference. If we're on the wrong side of the market, we try to correct as soon as we can, as soon as we can, to see the means to do that. We are not ever married to a position. You know, we're going to buy this and we're going to hold it no matter what. We don't think that makes any sense. We are ready to change. So, you know, it's okay to be wrong. It's not okay to just stay wrong. That's where you can really get hurt.
So we do watch the market. That's our daily job.
Sure.
To watch the market and what should be done with the client portfolios, because we are fiduciaries in every situation. We don't sell anything. In fact, I had a gentleman call and say, I'm thinking of giving you my account. I want you to, I've been listening to you and I want you to manage my account. And I said, well, how long have you listened and have you watched any of our webinars? Well, he's a recent listener and he hadn't seen any of our webinars. I said, I don't want your account. You have to, you, here's some homework. You have to go figure out whether or not what we do is comfortable for you. And here's some of the videos on our website to watch. I didn't mention, but it's been a while since we've mentioned this, but I also normally recommend a book, The Misbehavior of Markets, by Mandelbrot. And it's, in fact, the price has come down on Amazon. Last I looked, I think it was under $20.
Right. Yeah.
It's paperback. It is an easy read for people who don't have a financial education. There's formulas in it, but you can skip the formulas because they tell you what the formulas mean, but they put them in there for the OCD people.
That want to actually go play with the math, but the concepts are what's important, and it's a brilliant piece of writing.
But basically, that book explains that what we have been told about modern portfolio theory is a lie, and explains why it is not reliable as a long-term wealth builder. Now, it will work in a bull market because rising tide raises all boats, but there's no protection for bear markets, and particularly extended bear markets. Next week, we will not be on this time slot. We are going to be at 11 o'clock in the morning. So you can still sleep in. But you'll miss our 9 o'clock webinar. Register for the webinar at irradio.com. If you want to send us questions in advance, do so with help@irradio.com. That's help@irradio.com. You want to talk to us during the week? That's 800-317-9119. 800-317-9119. We salute our military. God bless them. If you're in service or have been, I mean, you make this country what it is. You have protected our freedom, and we are deeply grateful for that and the opportunity to acknowledge you. So have a great weekend. Have a great week. We are up and out of time. But again, the phone number for during the week is 800-317-9119. God bless you. God bless your family and the United States of America.